Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to In Theo Radio. We're doing a special Sunday night. It's our first Sunday night here in San Diego. We got two special guests on the line. And tonight, this is your host, Travar Hughes. I'm calling in. We're located in sunny San Diego. It's 6 p.m. It's Sunday. We're going to start having our shows more regularly on Sunday and also Wednesday night. So it'll alternate between Sundays and Wednesdays. Our guests tonight are joining us all the way from Illinois live. That's Bruce Sewick and Tom Roberts. Let's see if they've called in yet. We've got one caller on there. How do I bring them on the line? Hello, who's calling in? Is this Tom?
It's Bruce Sewick.
Hey, Bruce. Hi.
How are you?
Good to have you on the show.
Likewise. Thanks for the invite.
We'll wait and see when Tom gets on the show. Let me introduce you with a little bit of background, and then when Tom calls in, we'll let him speak. Okay. Just a little background on the both of them, Tom and Bruce. We met, I myself and my producer, Lori Zanna, met these guys at the MAPS Psychedelic Conference in April this year. And they were presenting on psychedelics, and they had really fascinating and informational ways of sharing. So we thought we'd invite you guys to join us, both you and Tom, Bruce. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Just for our callers or for our listeners tonight, anyone who wants to call in either from all over anywhere in the nation, call in on our live number here. It's area code 347-855-8334. That's 347-855-8334. And you can find our call-in number on our website. It's Entheo Radio, spelled entheoradio.com, entheoradio.com. Okay, we'll be taking calls after 6:30 Pacific time and after 8:30 Central time if there are listeners in those time zones. Let's see if we got Tom on the line. He's not called in yet, so I'm going to introduce you, Bruce, and we'll see if there's any technical difficulties and get Tom on the line while you're talking.
Okay.
So, Bruce Sewick, you are a teacher, a therapist, and an addictions counselor.
That's correct.
You are licensed as a clinical professional counselor, and you're a certified alcohol drug counselor. As well as a registered dual disorder professional.
Yes.
Wow. Explain that for our listeners.
Well, my basic license is a licensed clinical professional counselor in the state of Illinois, and the two addiction certifications reflect the fact that I work with dual diagnosed people. I work with people with mental illness and substance abuse problems as part of my a population, and also the agency they work at, which is a community mental health agency. We offer addiction services. So many people that come in through our doors have ongoing addiction problems that have to be addressed if they're at that point that they need help.
Very good. Very good. And then does that explain all of generally what you do?
Basically,
lay terms.
Yeah, I run a crisis program and a residential program at a community mental health center just south of O'Hare, and I'm also a teacher at two community colleges, Wright College and the College of DuPage. A little plug
Great.
Here, College of DuPage, I am offering, it's a weekend class called Psychedelic Mind You. It's kind of a condensed version of Dr. Roberts' course. It's going to be offered October 15th and October 16th, Friday night and all day Saturday, at the College of DuPage in Glen Ellyn. And I asked your producer, maybe you could put that on your website.
For sure. And remind me at the end of the show, I'll give you guys a chance to say closing statements and just remind our listeners of what you just said.
Okay.
So they can, if they're in the area, jump in on that class. You, let's see. So you kind of covered it. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention for our listeners is that your master's thesis on psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy for the terminally ill is available online at maps.org. And tell us a little bit about that thesis and some of the goodies we can look forward to reading about.
Okay. Actually, the inspiration for the thesis was my mother was dying of cancer at the time, and she was under an extreme amount of stress, anxiety, and depression for, you know, she had kind of reached the golden years, as she said, and then had a diagnosis of colon cancer, and it's pretty advanced. And I had always been interested in psychedelics, and it kind of resurrected my academic interest in it. I was going to graduate school then, and I dedicated the thesis to her, and, you know, as I said, as I watched her go through the process. It's kind of interesting because when I first submitted the thesis to the college, Roosevelt University, they turned it down, just flat out turned it down. I had to go around to the department and kind of explain to everybody this is a library thesis. This isn't any kind of research because we're dealing with substances that are still Schedule I. It took me a year to get all the research. Some of it was, you know, pretty old, and MAPS recently has put most of that information online, so it's easier to access. It was kind of a labor of love. As I said, my mom lived long enough to see that, and it just kind of renewed my interest in the compassionate use of psychedelics with, you know, chronic diseases that don't really have a cure or a way of successfully treating them. So I got to meet Rick Doblin at that time. He and his staff were incredibly helpful in providing information that I needed for the thesis, and it actually has opened many doors for me just by virtue of the fact that it's kind of an introduction.
Very good, and very close to home.
Mm-hmm. Very
close. So, in your thesis, is there anything that you share about the actual work you did with your mother, in which you talk about how her sessions went, or is that something you can share on the air?
Well, it's not like I used psychedelic-assisted therapy with her. It was my mother was of the generation where anything that's illegal would, you know, was kind of contraindicated. Even any mention of using things like marijuana for the nausea, she was more concerned that the doctors would find out. So it would have been difficult to convince her to do something. She was supportive of the movement, but as long as it was illegal, she still had that block. So it was more, as I said, it was more in my subconscious as I was writing that, you know, for people like her, that this should be available. And by the way, when I make my presentation on psychedelics that I've done to addiction counselors and mental health professionals, I start off with an interview by Pam Sakuda, who was in the psilocybin research for the end-of-life anxiety and depression study, and they interviewed her, and it's kind of my kickoff to present my topic. And it's about a 3 to 5 minute interview with her where she talks about how she was trying to deal with the dying process, and then by partaking in the research and ingesting psilocybin in a controlled setting, she had come to a way to kind of reconcile that in her mind, and she died a lot peacefully. I talked to her husband, and she pretty much lived every day until the end. They were walking, taking vacations until 2 weeks before her death. When I show that, prior to making my presentation, you could hear a pin drop because, you know, people aren't sure what this is going to be about, but it kind of gets everybody's attention. I think that using psychedelic psychotherapy with people that are dying is just a very powerful tool to assist them, and there's not much people can say in the way of refuting that.
Correct, yeah. Wow. very compelling. Even listening to that just now was very gripping. Thank you for sharing that. I believe we've got Tom on the line. Are you there, Tom?
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Great.
Can you hear me?
Welcome to the show. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Good. Good.
This is Tom Roberts, everybody. Say hello to the Internet viewers, listeners.
Hello, Internet viewers, listeners. I just heard Bruce giving the part of the talk on the dying patient. Yeah, that's a powerful bit of knowledge.
Okay, so let me introduce Tom Roberts, and then we'll talk about how you two know each other, and I'll let Bruce and you guys kind of talk back and forth about your meeting of each other and stuff. So Tom Roberts, he teaches at the world's only university cataloged course in psychedelics. He's been teaching since 1981 in this course, or this course started in 1981. Tom Roberts is also the author of Psychedelic Horizons, the co-editor of Psychedelic Medicine, a two-book set, the editor of Psychoactive Sacramentals?
Sacramentals, right.
Yes, and the founder of Rising Researchers, a program, Rising Researchers is a program for psychedelic conferences. Is that right?
Yep, you got it.
And
good.
And you're also co-editor for an online archive dedicated to psychoactive sacraments. That's www.csp.org, and you can do the /go/ Crest O Mathy. It's Christ O Mathy.
Just going to the CSP site will be easy to just click on it.
Okay,
there.
You should find it. You can our listeners can navigate from the csp.org.
Yeah, right. That's the easiest way to do it.
And you also originated the celebration of Bicycle Day.
That'll probably be my big contribution to the field.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Tell us a little bit about how you two met each other, and I heard, and I was reading a little bit about how the two of you are colleagues as well as one mentored the other.
Well, I was looking for studies of psychedelics, and I ran across Bruce's master's thesis in a list of academic resources. And I realized that he was in Roosevelt University, which is only about 60 miles east of here. And so we contacted each other that way. It was just a good bit of luck, good bit of finding him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Then he's come out and spoken to my courses, and we get together every once in a while.
And likewise, Tom has spoken at my classes, and so it's an honor to have him there. So it's been a very mutually satisfying relationship that continues. Thanks to people like yourself, Trevor.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're just trying to get out the good word that this is a viable and a healthy practice when done responsibly, and it can really support our medical community as well as continue forwarding our spiritual communities. And thank you both. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your ongoing work at the university. Tom, go ahead and introduce
well,
yourself.
I'm semi-retired now. I teach my psychedelics course once a year as a seminar in our honors program. So they're all honors students who are juniors and seniors, and the enrollment is limited to 15. So I get to teach the course I most like to teach with a bunch of very good students. That's about as good as it gets.
Nice. Thank you. Yes. I hear, too, that it's not just people who are studying the subject. It's all different majors.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's one of the intriguing things about it. They come from, engineering and accountancy and the arts and the social sciences, psychology, education. All that's one of the things that makes the course enjoyable. They all bring their own backgrounds to it. And, of course, there's nobody who's actually studying psychedelics, as a major.
Very good. All right. So the two of you were both at MAPS, am I correct?
Right.
What did each of you present on? Go ahead, start with Bruce.
Well, I presented on the way my course developed. I mean, basically, and you mentioned the mentoring. Dr. Roberts is my psychedelic academic mentor, and basically, you know, he thought, you know, why not see if one of the colleges that I teach at would be interested, and they were, and I took his syllabus and his course, and he gave me copies of a lot of his videos and made a weekend version of it. So the presentation at the MAPS conference was kind of that whole process, how it started, and then kind of how I benefited from it and what it's done for me. I kind of target mental health professionals, the addiction counselors, the CADCs. It gives me a chance to, you know, talk about the topic, provide some harm reduction information, because a lot of the students in the class are, one would assume, using psychedelics and don't have any real good information on it. So I just kind of presented how this thing developed and what the future holds for it and how it's benefited me. And again, it's something else that's opened a lot of doors, and people are interested in it, and it gives them a vehicle to talk about it, because it's been such a forbidden topic until all this very good research has come out. So that's basically what my talk was about.
Very good. All right. Thank you for sharing. And Tom, what did you share with us at the MAPS conference?
Well, I talked about the course that I just described and how it got developed and what some of my experiences are teaching it. My students are all undergraduates, whereas Bruce's are all graduate students. His are professionals, and mine are sort of pre-professionals from lots of different majors. So it's quite a different bunch of students. Most of them have had no psychedelic experience themselves. A great many of them, I suppose most of them, have been through the DARE program, so they have to like relearn a lot of things that they had wrong. Although they often know that their DARE program is just, you know, a lot of fluey, but still they don't really have much sense of what the real information is. And there have been so many good research studies coming out in the last couple of years that the field has grown very fast, like in the last 3 or 4 years. The MAPS conference in San Jose really showed that.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting stuff. Yeah, oh, it really was, yes. Yes. I personally found it very gratifying to find that, you know, my life's work was sort of being recognized as the whole field started to develop.
Yeah, we were saying earlier to each other, Bruce, Tom and I were talking about how just gratifying and just honored it was to be at that conference, and it was just like a really uplifting and a very hopeful conference, and a lot of good people came together for that.
Yeah, I think that the message there is kind of loud and clear that psychedelics are not counterculture; they're mainstream now. And
yeah.
And what Tom and you were talking about, one thing I point out in my class, and I still have my textbook from undergraduate psychology, psychedelic psychotherapy was legal when the textbook was written, and myself, like a lot of other people, went into the field thinking that I was going to be a psychedelic therapist, and you know, then came Richard Nixon and the war on drugs, and here we are, you know.
Yes.
Finally, as Doblin said, you know, the bad acid trip is over, and this is the psychedelic renaissance, and I'm very proud and honored to be part of it. And you know what Tom was saying, 1,200 people at the MAPS conference in San Jose, when the MAPS people and Rick Doblin walked out on the stage, it was just an unbelievable feeling.
Yeah, there are meetings and conferences sometimes that just have the feeling that this is a major key conference that's happening, and that conference had that feel to it. You know, you don't run across them very often, but boy, when you hit them, you know you hit them. And that was one of them.
Very nice. And both of you guys came from, both of you gentlemen came from a generation that used LSD as its primary entheogen for this kind of therapy, because it was pre-MDMA research. Talk a little bit about the use of LSD back in your generation, and maybe we'll get into that edgy question about Bicycle Day in a minute.
Bruce, do you want to go?
Oh, you can go, Tom.
Oh, okay. Well, I was in graduate school at Stanford in the late 1960s, and that was sort of the heyday of psychedelics, and San Francisco, of course, was sort of the center of things going on. And the interest that time was not very much among the people I knew in psychotherapy. It was more exploring oneself and just, you know, having a good time and wondering what's going on. Now, there was psychotherapy at that time, but the people I knew were not much interested in it at that time. And I had a class with Willis Harmon, who started the Institute of Noetic Sciences and was one of the first people to do some serious LSD research. And so some of the people in that seminar started talking about it, and I realized one could get into this more than just in a personal recreational area. So that's sort of how I made a transition from personal use to professional interest.
Very good. Now, I know Ralph Metzner. Do you know Ralph Metzner, Tom?
Yeah, sure.
Have you guys come across any like sharing together about the Noetic Sciences Institute?
No, we don't see.
Went to that.
Yeah, Bruce, have you?
No.
Ralph and I know each other, but we don't interact much. I mean, we travel sort of parallel paths.
Yeah.
Ralph was more interested in. Yeah, Ralph is more interested in mystical cultural stuff than I am.
Right.
So we honor each other's work, but we're not really talking about the same thing.
Very good. And then Bruce, when you were coming up, you came up a little later in schooling and research and stuff. So what was your experience of LSD in the time that you were learning?
Well, you know, having growing up in the, you know, the late 60s, early 70s, that's how I got interested in psychology, is my experiences with altered states of consciousness that, you know, included the spectrum of, you know, even things like sensory deprivation, floating, you know, John Lilly style, if I may say. And my exposure to it in the classroom, as it says academically, I remember, like it was yesterday, my introduction to psychology teacher was talking about, you know, the use of psychedelics in therapy, and one of our textbooks that we had to read was one of the Carlos Castaneda books, the first one, and there was, you know, this feeling that, you know, we're on the cusp of something, and then it just abruptly ended. So it kind of, for me, was just getting started, and then it was kind of aborted, and kind of went dormant for a while until, as I said, with my mother and that situation kind of resurrected my interest, and I've been lecturing to doing grand rounds presentation to hospitals, and the kind of interesting thing is I ended up presenting at the addictions conference, a big one downstate and one up in Chicago recently, and I had no problem when they did the call for papers, no resistance, pretty much standing room only in these presentations, and the addiction counselors were just thankful for presenting this. A lot of them knew it intuitively, but it's not part of your training. There's not usually a chapter or a lecture about the use of psychedelics in a proper way. You know, the problem has been the fact that drugs are considered bad, and they don't make the distinction. We're talking about drugs that do not have addiction potential. We're not talking about cocaine or methamphetamine. We're talking about psychedelics. And anybody that knows anything about these substances realize that they don't have that addictive potential that things like cocaine, alcohol, methamphetamine have.
Bruce, didn't they ask you to repeat one of the talks?
Yeah, I actually presented a whole day in Southern Illinois, the morning and afternoon. The interesting thing is there were two groups of people there. It was the Department of Corrections people, because it was not far from the Marion prison down there, and then there was the CADC, the addiction people, and it was kind of an interesting mix, because the Department of Corrections staff that were there were mostly the prison guards. To them, everybody that comes through their facility uses drugs of some sort, so they were kind of respectful to me, but I could tell by looking out over the crowd and their faces who worked for DOC and who was an addictions counselor.
Right.
So, but that... afterwards, people came up to me and said things like, you know, my brother died a couple of months ago, and I wish he could have had an MDMA session. It was so tough for him and the family. And, I mean, some people were, you know, very tearful about recollecting that and said, thank you so much for putting that out there. You know, we always knew that, you know, there was this potential, and it makes you feel good about spreading the word.
Yeah, right. Good.
Very helpful. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to jump on an interesting, edgy question about the creation of Bicycle Day with Tom. Why the holiday? And tell us a little bit about it for those who don't know what Bicycle Day is, because I'm sure there's a good deal of people who listen and don't know about it.
Okay, well, I thought that there ought to be some sort of day that people interested in psychedelics could honor, like this Martin Luther King Day and St. Patrick's Day. And, well, I think the psychedelics is a sort of an ethnic group of our own. And so originally I was thinking of having it on April 16th, which is the day that Albert Hoffman had his first exposure to LSD. But that year, the 16th came in the middle of the week, and it was not a good day to have a party. So I decided to have it on the 19th, which is the day when he intentionally took it, which is like 3 days later, because that was on the weekend. So that's why it's on the 19th rather than the 16th. Not a very good reason, but that's the way it's worked out on the calendar. So Bicycle Day celebrates his first intentional day. And, of course, it happens to precede 420, which is also a recognized holiday. So that's how that got going. And we had a meeting in my backyard for 4 or 5, 6, maybe 7 years, and then we stopped doing it when my daughter got into grade school and high school. But then I would put out a notice on email, and people have picked up on it all over the world. So I'm really very pleased about this. It's you know, if you Google Bicycle Day, other than finding some actually bicycle rallies, you find a lot of stuff out there. And there's been some really nice artwork and creative work on Bicycle Day. So I'm really pleased with the way that's caught on.
For my Facebook listeners and friends, I get invited to that for 3 years now on Facebook, and I always click I'm attending, or I'm like, maybe attending. If I'm going to get on a bike, it's like an encouragement for people who are intending on supporting the psychedelic community, maybe by riding a bike on that day, or by you know, just being mindful of what happened on that day with the synthesis of LSD and then the deliberate dosage 3 days later.
Yeah, there's no real location for it. The location is wherever people are.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's no, like, you know, it's not like a ballpark that everybody goes to or anything like that. And it's the attitude of the people going that really makes it the holiday.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm glad, because somehow I've been invited for 3 years in a row, and, you know, I haven't been out of the psychedelic closet for 3 years, so it's really interesting that I've gotten invited for more than I've been out of the closet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that it also, part of the idea of psychedelics being mainstream, too. I mean, why shouldn't we have a holiday that honors the intentional ingestion of a substance that changed the world? I mean, LSD has impacted the world, and people are coming out of the closet. I mean, the computer industry was LSD-fueled, and Esalen, you know, one of the, you know, great centers of transpersonal consciousness, you know, was back in the days of Stanislav Grof, and I mean, I'm sure Tom could speak to that. So, you know, we have a very good history, and people are coming out of the closet, and who are finding out that some of these great ideas actually came about from an altered state of consciousness, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, that's right. It's largely the recognition of what's already been going on, rather than new stuff. So, yeah, the people who use psychedelics often recognize that they have benefited individually. Now, a lot of people haven't, too. That's important to say that, but that then gives them some way of talking about it or recognizing it with friends and recapitulating their own experiences themselves.
Now, Bruce mentioned the Stanislav Grof's work. And for listeners who aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about that. And maybe, Tom, if you can talk a little bit more about some of the books that are read in your curriculum, and Bruce as well, and some of the books that you guys recommend when you teach classes on the subject.
Well, Groff is the world's leading psychotherapist with psychedelics. And he has a whole raft of books out. The one that I use in my class is Realms of the Human Unconscious, which has been republished just last year with a new title called LSD, Doorway to the Numinous. And what he does in that are two really important things, three. To me, the least important, but not to therapists, is the fact that he uses LSD as a tool, as an adjunct to psychotherapy. And it's important that LSD is not a chemical reaction that cures people, but it makes the psychotherapy work better. It's an adjunct to psychotherapy. It's not like you take a drug with having a particular reaction. But the big thing to me is that is the view of the human mind that comes out of it. Because as a psychologist, I'm always interested in the human mind. And he uses psychedelics as sort of an amplifier or magnifier so that we can see and experience parts of our mind that we normally wouldn't see or experience. So it acts to the understanding the human mind the same way the microscope does to understanding the human body. And then the third thing that comes out of that is, if you have all these people sampling parts of their mind, if you put all these peoples together, all these pictures together, what map of the mind do you get? So it comes out with a different map of the human mind. And I think that using LSD as a research tool and coming out with a different map of the mind, each of those is a major advance in understanding our mind. And he did both of those as well as the psychotherapeutic work. So I really recommend Groff's work tremendously. I think he really should get a Nobel Prize or some sort of international recognition. Can you hear me okay? I'm getting some static.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a little static too. We can hear just fine.
Okay. Good. So anyway, that's my view of Groff. And there are DVDs and videotapes, and you know, you can buy a lot online. He's a very well-educated person. He probably knows more things than most people and knows almost all of them in more depth than most people. Very well-educated. And his works sort of show this when he can call on history and literature and anthropology and religion and so forth. So I have the utmost regard for Stan Groff.
Thank you for sharing that. Any other books that you recommend? Maybe give Bruce a chance to jump in with some good recommendations from his coursework.
Well, I'll tell you what is one of the books that first got my interest in considering kind of a psychedelic lifestyle as normal is Andrew Weil's book, The Natural Mind, and I got a chance to have him autograph it at the conference, and it was something that came out in the 70s, and it really, I think, changed a lot of people's ideas on the way you can use altered states of consciousness in a good way, and how that sort of thinking is not a bad thing. So that is kind of a curious thing, because it is the long story made short of how I ended up teaching the class at College of DuPage. When I interviewed for the job, I was talking to the addictions coordinator, and I noticed the book, The Natural Mind, on his bookshelf. And I said, well, that's kind of an unusual book for somebody in your position. And he pulled it off and said, not exactly. And we started having a discussion, and I had mentioned Dr. Roberts' class, and he said, well, why don't you give it a shot here? And I did. So I'd recommend The Natural Mind, and two other books that I know Tom recommends is Storming Heaven by Jay Stevens, which is about LSD and the American Dream, and Acid Dreams, CIA, LSD, and the 60s Rebellion. These are some books that give a historical perspective, too, on how these substances have changed history, and it just are things that aren't known. You know, the CIA's use, I think that's kind of out there now. And I just watched the movie Men Who Stare at Goats. That kind of touches on it a little bit, too. I highly recommend that for anybody out in the audience.
Yeah, I like those Acid Heaven and Storming Heaven, or Acid Dreams and Storming Heaven. I start off with Huxley's Doors of Perception, which really is just a long essay. And everybody we read the rest of the semester refers back to that book, so students know what they're talking about. And Huxley was so important in getting the idea out there in the general educated public. So that's really, that's one of the key books in the field. And then just this last semester, I've used the book Higher Wisdom, which is a collection of essays by eminent elders. And I found that works very well because these are people with experience of 40, 50, and even 60 years of psychedelics reflecting back on what they learned in the meantime. So it's edited by Roger Walsh and Charles Grobe, Higher Wisdom. I really recommend that book a lot.
And of course, the MAPS journals.
Oh, yes, right. Yes.
Those are very good.
Yes.
Where can we find a lot of those MAPS journals if we're on the MAPS website?
Oh, just click on Bulletin, MAPS Bulletin. And it'll get, you know, they had them all online back, you know, what, 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And some very good articles in them.
Very good. Now, I'll make a note to put that on our fan pages on Facebook.
Yeah. www.maps.org. And have them go into that. It's an incredibly rich site. A lot of the psychedelic research is listed there, people's individual experiences. It's a very, very rich site. And one of the things I do in my classes, I have something called Internet Field Trips, and one of the field trips they take is the MAP site.
Cool. Very awesome.
And then I started
recommending that locally. A lot of my students are into reading a lot of this stuff, and I teach about it in the botany, so I'll tell them to check out the MAPS site more.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, do you teach a botany course?
I teach ethnobotany, so
a little bit of herbalism
and indigenous use of plants.
Oh, great, good.
We stick to a lot of R. Gordon Wasson's work and Christian Raj and Schultes.
Great. Yeah, those are the people in the field. Yeah, I have an enormous respect also for Carl Ruck's books. Apples of Apollo is a very good one.
I'll check it out.
Ruck, R-U-C-K. Apples of Apollo. He's a specialist in ancient Greek language and also the botany of ancient Greece. So,
it deals with the Eleusinian mysteries, huh?
Exactly, right. But yes, that's the main thing. But then he gets into the whole Mideastern area and the use of plants in religion and medicine of that particular time.
Very good. I'll check it out.
Yeah, good.
And let's see. This is the time that I like to encourage callers to call in and ask questions to our guests. So if you guys want to encourage anyone on your end or just reach out to say, hey, we're available for questions, everyone can call us if they go to the entheoradio.com website, or if you dial our phone number, which is area code 347-855-8334. That's area code 347-855-8334. And we don't have any callers other than you two on the line, so we'll just keep chatting.
Okay.
You guys are open to taking some off-cuff
questions. Oh, sure, yeah,
live
sure,
questions.
Sure.
Sure, you learn a lot from that.
Bruce, question for you. It's a question about integration, integrating your drug counseling and therapy with the use of psychedelics. Is this something that you do currently or that you're looking forward to doing? Are you able to comment on that?
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to doing it because of the nature of the substances still being a Schedule I. They're illegal, and the population that I work with would be contraindicated for that, mostly. But the interesting thing is that the whole idea of psychedelic therapy and the whole way Groff looks at it is very analogous in some ways to a psychotic break, because oftentimes there's kind of a disintegration of ego. And, you know, one of the things I remember talking to a psychologist at the state-operated psych ward is not that this would ever happen because of the litigiousness of society, but if somebody had a psychotic break for the first time, what if you treated it like a bad trip and just talked the guy out of it, talked the guy down, rather than give somebody a shot of Thorazine and stop that that kind of transcendence, potential psychic eruption that occurs when somebody's having a psychotic break. So part of what I can take from psychedelic therapy and use in what I do is that the kind of concept that sometimes I see a lot of people that have had their first psychotic break, and you see how that whole thing was handled, and you know what I get a chance to ask them on what precipitated it, and you know always begs this question: is do people always have to be super medicated, or what if that was the only way they could process something like that? And that was part of what Groff did, is he would give people a peak psychedelic experience, which, you know, was a profound experience and kind of a disintegration of ego. And then when they came back, even if it was a bad trip, then they were able to integrate the whole thing. I think the way oftentimes we treat people that have psychotic breaks is quick, give them a shot of Thorazine, but you're kind of stopping that. You're kind of stopping that from proceeding. So I don't know if this could ever be researched, but I think that it's kind of interesting that there's this kind of analogy. And also one other thing that I think most people are unaware of is we got our concept of mental illness by the early psychedelic research, because up until this came about, it was kind of very Freudian and about bad parenting. And then they found out when people are having a psychedelic trip that you can chemically stop that. What if you did the same thing to somebody with a mental illness using, you know, these drugs? And that's kind of how that came about.
Yeah, one of the problems psychedelics had when they first came out is the model of mental health at that time was that all your problems had to do with being mistreated or traumas as childhood. And the idea to treat them with a drug was a very radical idea. Now, I mean, it's just part of our culture, but at that time it was really weird.
Huh. Interesting. Very, very cool tidbit of information. For our listeners, I know I was a little bit unfamiliar with the term. For our listeners, a psychotic break. Can you define it, one of you or both of you?
Well, Bruce, that's your... Yeah,
yeah, that's... You know, when I give my card out to people, whenever I get a call from somebody, it's usually not a good story, you know, just by nature of what I do. But a psychotic break is actually a break from reality. In the case of a psychiatric psychotic break, you know, somebody might, whatever precipitated it, they're kind of launched into a different world, so to speak, kind of like they're watching a different channel than we are. If we're watching Channel 5, mm-hmm. They're watching Channel 11. Dreaming, by definition, is also psychosis because it's kind of a break from reality and it's very altered. So it's not exactly a bad thing, but it's kind of the way society looks at that. And I think that kind of, you know, to some degree transferred a little into psychedelics because, as Tom was saying, one of the things that psychedelics were called early on were psychotomimetics because they thought it mimicked psychosis. And so people studied people under the influence to see, you know, what that entailed, and that was kind of a way to do it in a laboratory.
Very good. Did you want to comment on that, Tom?
Well, on something else, and that's that if people are interested in volunteering to be subjects in psychedelic research, there's a website they can go to that lists the research that's being done and the characteristics that one must have to be a volunteer. And it's www.clinicaltrials.gov, G-O-V. And then once at that site, they should search hallucinogen, not psychedelic, because the medical literature is still primarily talking about hallucinogens. They're looking for volunteers in Baltimore now at Johns Hopkins. These should be adults in good physical and mental shape, generally well-educated. So this is the way to find out who's doing what and what research has already been completed and what research is in the works. So that's www.clinicaltrials.gov, G-O-V, and then search hallucinogen. So as new studies appear, that's where they will first appear online. And this is, you can tell it's a government site. It's run by the National Institutes of Health. So all the studies there have been approved or are applied for approval for National Institutes of Health.
Very cool. Yeah, I'll direct some of our listeners there and some people personally in the community of San Diego. I know.
I don't know if anybody is doing.
Go ahead.
I don't know if anybody doing research in San Diego, but there may be some coming. Well, there may be some come on the way on various West Coast sites. You know, they have to apply. It's a very long, tedious process to apply for approval. So some of those are going on. Also, there's recruiting going on for veterans who have had post-traumatic stress disorder, and they'll find a site on there where they can apply to be a subject in a study that's going on in South Carolina.
Very cool. Thank you for that wonderful information. I'm just checking the website here, clinicaltrials.gov, and following your instructions. Looks like we've got a few callers, too. I'm being let. There's a 707 number, and there's an 831 number. I'm going to go ahead and let the callers speak with you guys, if it's all right. First caller is a 707. Go ahead.
Hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Who is this?
Oh, hi. This is David Lukoff. Tom, I met you when you gave that presentation at Stanford and had a chapter in one of your books. Well, I thought I would share some good news, which is that I will be teaching a course at ITP in the fall, what's called Advanced Clinical Seminar at ITP on psychedelics.
Great.
Including its history and uses in therapy and so on.
Oh, by the way, ITP is Institute for Transpersonal Psychology.
That's
is
right,
it in Menlo Park or Mountain View? Or
it's in Palo Alto.
Palo Alto, okay.
Yeah. And it's part of a spiritually oriented PsyD program.
Good.
Clinical doctorate in psychology. It's not a required course. It's an option, an elective. Alicia Danforth, you know, who has been assisting Charles Grobe down at UC Irvine, will be the TA for that class. And she has a lot of hands-on experience with psychedelic psychotherapy. And Jim Fadiman is also going to be involved. And I thought I'd just also mention that this was triggered by the MAPS conference. Jim is also on the faculty at ITP, and he and I were just chatting in the hallway there after a wonderful presentation. And Jim said ITP should have a class on psychedelics. You know, he is the co-founder of ITP. And in the whole history, of 30-some years, there's never been a course on psychedelics. So I just went ahead and proposed it, and it was accepted as a course in my workload as well as being an elective.
Congratulations. Good for you. Well, I wish I could be there and take it.
Well, I mean, just listening to you guys talk has, I've been jotting down notes and ideas for the class, and it would be wonderful to find a way to Skype you both in for some period of one of the classes. It will be Tuesday evenings from 6 to 8.
That sounds
good. All right, good.
Congratulations, David. I want to welcome you sometime to come and talk about your class or the research you're doing on the show in Theo Radio with us.
Well, sure. Now, I am not personally doing any research. I can chime in about an area that I have been involved with, which is spiritual emergencies, and Stan Groff has been one of the pioneers in that as well. And a lot of my involvement in this area comes from a spiritual emergency that was triggered by taking LSD. I took it on my own, and it ended up triggering a period of about 2 months where I thought I was a reincarnation of Buddha and Christ and was writing a holy book. I actually prepared a holy book and handed it out to people in Berkeley, and went through a two-month phase of that, during which I was supported by friends who let me, you know, crash with them, stay with them. I had no money whatsoever. So I didn't end up in a psych hospital, and I just kind of was able to move through the whole experience much the way that Stan Grof talks about. And,
good.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and there was actually a treatment center by a Jungian, John Perry, which operated in San Francisco and would let people go through episodes like that, some of which were triggered by psychedelics and some of which weren't.
Wow.
Good.
Yeah, we could have you on the show with that. How do we get in touch with you if I need to? I don't want to say your number
that
or your
number,
email on there.
Well, you can certainly use that number. That's my office number.
Oh, the number. There we go. Yeah, it pops up on our switchboard. Well, we'll give you a call. And that's David Wilkoff?
Lukoff.
How do you say? How do you spell it?
It's L-U-K-O-F-F.
L-U-K-O-F-F.
Double F as in Frank.
Double F. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for being on the show. Did you have any other questions for our guest tonight, Bruce and Tom?
I have a comment about Bruce, and that's that he has done some very excellent bibliographies of research on transpersonal topics and mysticism. And
uh-huh.
When I'm working in the field, I go to those bibliographies to find out what's what. Now, they're a little old now, but as of that date, they're definitely the best thing, probably still the best thing.
Yeah. Well, to the degree that you're both comfortable sharing your syllabi, I'd love to see them,
sure.
You know, they'd be great for picking your brains in that way. This will be a little more clinical kind of course that I'll be running, I think.
Yeah.
This is actually for people who will be clinical psychologists. And psychedelics come up a lot, you know, in people's therapy, even who don't aren't using it formally in psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. I don't know if you were at that MAPS session where Jim Fadiman asked the audience of about 400 people, how many of you have taken a psychedelic drug in the last year in one of these psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy research protocols? And nobody raised their hand. And then he said, how many of you have taken a psychedelic drug in the past year? And almost everybody raised their hand. So, you know, I think that's going to be an important thing to cover. Many of the people do bring those kinds of issues up in therapy.
Yeah, right. Good.
Dave,
right.
Do we have your email?
Don't say the email on the air. I will
okay.
forward you guys his phone numbers just for purposes
okay.
of privacy.
Yeah,
David,
and
David, this is Tom. Do you have my email?
I am not sure I do offhand. Although
okay.
we did
oh,
correspond
oh, oh.
around the book, I remember.
The book, yeah,
EJC.
Right. Okay, I'll send my bibliography to Jim Fadiman.
You know, do you still have this one, WPO at wpo.cso.niu.edu? Must
yes,
be that
it's, there's a much shorter version of that, but that still gets to me.
All right, well, we'll figure it out, but that'd be great.
Yeah, just email me and I'll send you the bibliography.
Will do.
Or the syllabus, yes. rather.
Okay.
Good, that's
Bruce,
great.
How are you available?
Well, you were just going to exchange information because I guess I can give you my email address, you know, or phone number.
You guys can publicly exchange the email addresses on the air if you want, but I just for our listeners, I don't necessarily want you to be bombarded with
yeah, it's probably best to do it offline. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let me start with you then, Tom, and we'll go from there.
Okay, and I can send you Bruce's. Put
yeah.
you two in touch.
Excellent. Okay.
Perfect.
Good.
I'm
going to
make sure I relay your phone number to them both when I call.
Sure, absolutely. That would be just fine. Sure.
All right. Thanks for being on the show with us.
All right. Good talking with you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night. Okay, gentlemen. We have one more caller, and that's probably all we have time for. Just a reminder, this is an 831 area code. You're on the air. 831 area code.
Yes.
Hi, who are you?
Yes, I'm in Santa Cruz, California.
And
I was wondering, everyone's talking about therapy. Are there other uses going on? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, there's
okay.
Religious use going on.
Well, there's the whole spiritual religious angle that's being developed. There are a couple of ayahuasca churches that have received approval for judicial approval. Of course, there's a Native American church, and there's a lot sort of underground ayahuasca and DMT churches too. So yes, there's a lot going on. In fact, my major interest is in the spiritual use of psychedelics. I use the word entheogen when I'm talking about the spiritual use of psychedelics. So, sure, there's a lot going on. And I imagine you've done a Google search and been absolutely overwhelmed by all the stuff that's out there. I edited a book called Psychoactive Sacramentals. And that came out of a conference that was done on the entheogenic use of psychedelics in 1995. Actually, I'm not sure whether it's out of print or not. Psychoactive Sacramentals. And that book that I mentioned, Higher Wisdom, is not entirely, but largely about the religious use of psychedelics. So, yes, there's a lot out there. Also, the Johns Hopkins studies that Roland Griffiths did were the use of psilocybin to provide meaningful and significant spiritual experiences to people. And you'll find those listed lots of different places. Again, it's Roland Griffiths, G-R-I-F-F-I-T-H-S, at Johns Hopkins. And he had a study that was published in 2006 and a 14-month follow-up in 2008. And those are the best experimental studies that I know of. And their bibliographies are very helpful. Oh, the current Journal of Transpersonal Psychology has a very good article by Bill Richards on the return of psychedelics as religious sacraments, and he summarizes the research to date and then talks about directions it might take. And again, his name is Bill Richards, William Richards, and it's in the current Journal of Transpersonal Psychology. Bill is one of the monitors of the research that's being done at Johns Hopkins. That is, he sits with the people as a sitter during the sessions and has a background in religion and psychotherapy, so very good good credentials that he brings to it.
I'm going to interrupt you guys because we have 3 minutes remaining on the show, and the last time we had Steve Beyer on the line, he got cut off when he was saying his goodbyes, so just promptly initiate that if you are a listener tonight and you're looking forward to upcoming shows, we're either Wednesday or Sunday nights. Our shows are advertised usually on Facebook through my site or our fan page, which is called, we have two of them now, is Entheogens and Shamanic Herbs Radio, and there's Entheo Radio. You can become fans of both. You can become friends with me. You can become friends with Bruce Sewick and Tom Roberts. If you reach out to us on Facebook. You can probably find us all on the Maps Facebook site as well as the Maps site. Anything you guys want to say in the last 90 seconds to the audience?
Well, I think that's it. Thank you for having the show. It's been fun being on.
We appreciate the opportunity and look forward to listening to your radio station with have some additional ideas of people that would love to contribute. So thank you for helping make it mainstream.
Yeah, and for anyone who's looking for us, once again, it's Entheo Radio, spelled like entheogen, entheoradio.com, entheoradio.com. If you're in San Diego, you can also find our local events on goodalchemy.com. That's where the information about ethnobotany is. And we're going to promptly finish. Thank you both, Bruce and Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, and good night.
Good night, everyone.